WLAK Amory and 107.5 FM W298DK Amory. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. The ceasefire in Gaza has taken effect. The Israeli cabinet approved President Trump's plan for a ceasefire late Thursday. All hostages will be released, but ABC's Ian Panel in Tel Aviv says there are still many questions.
People are understandably very skeptical on the Gazan side of the border that what will happen is that Hamas released the hostages, and then there's no further part to the deal. It's a very real fear that Israel will then resume the war.
Venezuelan politician Marina Corina Machado won the Nobel Peace Prize. The Norwegian Nobel Committee cited her key unification work within Venezuela's political opposition. Government shutdown looks set to stretch into next week after the Senate left for the weekend with no deal. And New York's Attorney General Letitia James calls criminal charges filed by a federal prosecutor baseless and says President Trump is weaponizing the administration of justice. This is ABC News.
Fabulous Farm Babe Pam Yonke here. You're listening to 107.5 WLAK, home of the Midwest Farm Report.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabe. It's called show business for a reason, and oftentimes the business part is what drives creative or really talented people away, such is the case with actor Chauncey Leopardi, best known for his role as Squints in The Sandlot. The actor recently sat down with People.com and said that as an actor, it was the constant auditions and the grind that made him step back from the biz. These days, Leopardi is busy raising his 5 children and running a cannabis business, saying it was a pretty smooth transition as he always had a life outside Hollywood. He also added that he really enjoyed his life as an actor. His credits also include Freaks and Geeks and Father of the Bride. Here's another really cool thing that came out of the interview. Squints says he still keeps in touch with Smalls, Benny the Jet, and Ham. He says they have multiple group chats and not only text quite often, but actually see each other at sports signings and events. Great story. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabe, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Game 5 tomorrow night. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Baseball, the last time the Brewers faced Cubs pitcher Matthew Boyd, they knocked in 3 runs in the first inning. Last night, Boyd pitched into the 5th as the Cubs shut out the crew 6-0. Pat Murphy.
Yeah, I mean, he was great. Boyd was fantastic. He made pitches. How much money did they give him? $39 million. He earned it tonight. He was great.
So Game 5 is tomorrow night at 7:08 at American Family Field to decide who will advance to face the Dodgers for the National League pennant. NBA, the Bucks beat the Pistons 117-111 last night in preseason basketball in Milwaukee. NFL, the Packers face the Bengals Sunday afternoon, but kicker Brandon McManus injured his kicking leg at Wednesday's practice, a quad injury. Matt LaFleur.
Yeah, that's a major concern right now. So we'll see how he's doing today and tomorrow, and you know we'll have a plan ready to go.
Now McManus says he thinks he'll be okay. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Doctors Without Borders is delivering life-saving medical care where it's needed most in communities around the world. From bandaging war-wounded patients in Sudan to providing clean drinking water in Haiti, we're in more than 70 countries worldwide, bringing patients from sick to recovering, from emergency to aid, from crisis to care. This life-saving care is made possible by a global movement of supporters like you. Thank you.
Rational Revolution with Mark Becker.
Frequent guest and former Republican operative Carlton Huffman joins the show to talk about all the day's headlines. Join me.
Saturdays at 2, Sundays at 1 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Start your day with me, Pam Yonke, every morning with the Midwest Farm Report, right here on 107.5 WLAK.
It is going to be mostly sunny today, another beautiful fall day with a high in the low to mid-60s here this afternoon. Tonight, clear, we'll drop into the upper 30s to near 40. Then tomorrow, more of the same, lots of sunshine with a high in the mid to upper 60s. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Currently, it's 51.
where working people come to talk. It's the Rick Smith Show, weeknights at 9 on the Civic Media Radio Network. Join me for an honest approach to the issues American working families care about. No talking points, no focus groups. Get ready for a heavy dose of democracy, fairness, grit, and no apologies. It's current affairs from a working class labor perspective. Facts are center, science is real, and everyone gets a seat at the table. The Rick Smith Show, weeknights at 9 on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Maggie Dawn.
At 5 o'clock, I'm joined by Jennifer Sullivan of the Center for Budget and Policy Priorities. We break down what's going on with MAGA's refusal to talk about making healthcare affordable for Americans under the ACA.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays 4 till 6.
Mother Nature making a little noise out there this morning across some areas of Wisconsin. A little lightning, a little thunder, and a little rain. Hello, everybody. It's a Friday. I am the fabulous Farm Babe Pam Yonke. Hey, rainfall reporters, what you got? Our talk text line is always open to you. You can call it and leave a message. You can text your message in. You can even send us pictures. 877-301-FARM. That's 877-301-3276. Now, the forecast in front of me tells me that these showers are going to move through probably until late morning. We are looking at daytime highs today, right around 71. Tomorrow, sunny and 66. Sunday, sunny and 70 degrees. Maybe a chance of showers back around Columbus Day Monday. We'll find out what Stumuck has to say about that. Also on this Friday morning, wrapping up our Rural Mental Health series, Kylie Allen's going to share a story about how one farmer decided to turn to posting a blog to help with some of the mental health concerns that she had. That story is on the way. Ben Jarbo got a chance to visit with Representative Derek Van Orden about the latest developments on immigration reform. Big issue for a lot of Wisconsin agriculture, agribusiness. We'll find out what he learned there. Up next, talking with Wisconsin Senator Pat Teston about what he calls a bonehead maneuver by the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture to escalate fees being paid by livestock marketing groups in the state. All that just around the corner.
At Channel, we always show up for our farmers.
Is that tar spot or rust?
Incoming!
Definitely rust.
Rick, how did you...
Dropping in to check on your crop, Bill. Let's call your agronomist before that rust can hurt your yield.
That sounds great, but when did you learn to skydive?
Self-taught, Bill. Kind of a prodigy.
From personalized insights to year-round support, Channel Seed Pros always show up. Visit channel.com to learn more. Channel, all in, all season. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
We want the cream of the crop! We want the cream of the crop! We want the cream of the crop!
There's a buzz on the field tonight. The dairy farming crowd is demanding Pioneer brand Plenish high oleic soybeans.
These fans know that growing Plenish high oleic soybeans for dairy rations can help farmers reduce ration costs while increasing milk fat content.
The cream of the crop rises to the top.
Plant the 100th season of Pioneer. Visit pioneer.com/feedplenish.
Boneheaded maneuver. That's not a phrase you hear often in this business, but it's the phrase that was used by Wisconsin Senator Pat Teston from Stevens Point to describe his reaction to proposed livestock licensing fee increases that are being proposed by the Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. From the southern end of the world's longest barn in Madison, I'm Farm Director Pam Yonke, and I talked to the senator this week. He is the chair of the Senate Agriculture and Tourism Committee, and he's not only keeping an eye on those fees being proposed, he's also keeping an eye on solar arrays around the state of Wisconsin. That's where we start our conversation. Teston, along with Representative Scott Krug, have introduced legislation that's designed to give communities more power over where solar arrays are being located. Teston says instead of taking up valuable farmland, why don't we take a look at smaller parcels of land, unused portions of land for these solar projects? He explains why this is working in other states, and he'd like to see it working here.
Yeah, so the community solar legislation, it's been around for the last two or three sessions and been spearheaded by Representative Krug, and prior to me taking the lead on this bill had been authored by former state senator Dewey Strobel. And, you know, for me, one of the primary reasons why I decided to author this legislation with Representative Krug is primarily because within my Senate district, the 24th Senate district, we have essentially become ground zero for these massive solar array projects that have been proposed by the utility companies. And to be honest, this is an issue that I've actually really struggled with to try and find the right path forward, because from my standpoint, this is, I'm a firm believer in private property rights. And if individuals want to lease their land, they should have every right to do so. But at the same time, these projects are so massive, upwards of 9,000 to 10,000 acres. And I have several within my district that are going through the Public Service Commission right now. To me, it raises some red flags, because one, there is virtually no buy-in from local units of government. There is really, concerns with taking high valuable ag land out of commission for the next 2 to 3 decades. Yeah, what's unique about this process is currently these larger massive solar array projects, they go through the Public Service Commission. And so while there's opportunity for individuals who may have or express concern or want to support a project, there really is zero opportunity and no local control for local units of government to raise any concerns that get brought up by these proposals. And again, this is an issue that I have certainly struggled with as it relates to private property rights and allowing individuals to enter into contracts and lease their land for these solar projects. But at the same time, the concern that I have is, one, there is virtually no local control whatsoever. And two, we're taking thousands upon thousands of acres of high valuable ag land out of commission. And so why I found the solar or the community solar legislation so appealing is that these are smaller projects. They work with local developers to find land that might not be high valuable ag land and to do smaller operations, whether it's, 30, 40, 50 acres. And more importantly, it allows for local control. And to me, that is absolutely crucial. And the other component of this, why I think it's so appealing and why I support it, is we have the highest energy rates in the entire Midwest. And from my standpoint, we need to do an all of the above when it comes to thinking outside the box to help lower our electricity costs here in the state of Wisconsin. And so this is, from my standpoint, it is free market. It still allows for projects to move forward. There are no tax subsidies associated with any of these projects. And what's really unique, and despite the fact that the utilities have been staunchly opposed to this, and understandably so, because it impacts their business model, which currently they have a monopoly on, a regulated monopoly, in other states where this has been implemented, here's the kicker. Those very same utility companies that oppose this legislation are still in operation. They're still extremely profitable. And at the same time, when we have solar developers here in the state of Wisconsin, they currently can't bid on any projects. In fact, there's Arch Electric based up in Superior. They have their workers every week driving from Superior all the way down to Illinois because they currently can't do business here in the state of Wisconsin. What sense does that make to anyone? And so this is an opportunity for us to empower employers right here in Wisconsin where they don't have to drive, 10, 15 hours away, and the opportunity to create some of these projects right here in their own backyard.
Now, Pat, let's switch gears. We'll wait and see what happens as far as the solar array conversation at the state capitol. But one conversation that is red hot and happening very quickly has to do with some proposed escalated fees that really could impact Wisconsin's livestock sector. I'm not talking necessarily about just farmers, but these are the marketing arms that farmers depend on, the livestock truckers that move our livestock and the farms themselves. You've been in conversations with a lot of different people over this one, and it's taking us down a path we haven't been before, isn't it?
Anyone outside of the ag industry probably has not heard of this, but rest assured, if what's being proposed gets enacted, we are all going to feel this at the grocery store. So there was a recent Supreme Court ruling, and again, this is where I keep reminding people elections have consequences, and obviously with the new liberal majority on the state Supreme Court, it has definitely shifted the dynamic and the approach that they have taken in consideration the previous makeups of the court. So One of the things that has been really under assault and taken away from us is our ability to have oversight on the administrative rules process. And by and large, this has worked extremely well. It's been a very healthy relationship in years past where, you know, oftentimes when we enact legislation or a bill gets proposed, we give agencies, whether it's the ACCAP or the DNR, the ability to write administrative rules that essentially have the effect of law. And how typically that's worked in the past, and it worked extremely well in the past, is that the agency, after legislation got signed, would create administrative rules. They would then present them to the standing committees, and then they would move on to the Joint Committee on Administrative Rules. And they would be the ones, the last backdrop, to basically say, you know what, this is great. They'd move it forward. Or if there were concerns or red flags, they would pump the brakes and tell the agency to go back to the drawing board. So providing a really good check and balance on the executive branch. Now, with one of the recent Supreme Court rulings, that is gone. That does not exist. It is out the window. We have virtually zero to no oversight. So as a result of that ruling, what we have seen from a number of agencies at the direction of Governor Tony Evers is basically they are the marching orders are agencies do whatever you want. And so a few weeks ago, the Department of Agriculture, Trade and Consumer Protection, as it relates to, our livestock auctions and individuals who transport livestock, proposed significant fee increases, some upwards of 1,700% of where they are currently. And it is certainly going to cause a ripple effect. And, you know, I've had numerous conversations with Wisconsin Farm Bureau, the Wisconsin Dairy Association, and others who are expressing concerns. And while there was public comment a couple of weeks ago, and I know a number of individuals came out in strong opposition to this, there's really not a whole lot we can do aside from encourage individuals to reach out to the Department of Agriculture, Trade and Consumer Protection and tell them this is absolutely boneheaded and the wrong course, and it's going to hurt Wisconsin farmers. And more importantly, it's also going to hurt Wisconsin families who are going to see increased fees when they go to purchase meat at the grocery store. And so this is deeply troubling, and I'm hoping that if there's enough pushback, the department's going to go back to the drawing board. But unfortunately, as it stands right now, as a sitting elected official in the legislature, there is virtually nothing I can do. And it is so frustrating. And I can only imagine for those individuals who work in this industry, who are going to have their pocketbooks detrimentally impacted. I can't even imagine the frustration that they're feeling right now. And so we're trying to do what we can to raise awareness and encourage people to reach out to the department. And I'm hoping they reverse course, because this is absolutely a boneheaded maneuver.
Not mincing words, that's Wisconsin Senator Pat Teston, chair of the Senate Agriculture and Tourism Committee. He is talking about proposed fee increases that the Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection is advancing that the state legislature has absolutely no oversight on. Instead, as Teston said, it is going to fall on the shoulders of farmers, livestock marketers, those connected with the industry, to be very vocal on their thoughts regarding these fees. Remember, public comment continues to be accepted through October 15th. From the southern end of the world's longest barn in Madison, I'm Farm Director Pam Yonke.
What weather is in store for the Midwest today? Stay tuned as Ag Meteorologist Stu Muck gives you the latest forecast in just moments, right here on the Midwest Farm Report.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Big Ten football returns to Madison this fall. The Wisconsin Badgers battle Iowa, Ohio State, Washington, and others to defend Camp Randall this season. From the grind of every snap to the roar of jump around, Badgers leave it all on the field. Be a part of all the tradition Wisconsin football has to offer. Single game tickets are available now at uwbadgers.com or by calling 1-800-GO-BADGERS. Together, we're Wisconsin like that.
It's the Eco Minute, powered by Clean Wisconsin, your environmental voice since 1970. I'm Amy Berrio. Concerned residents in the town of Stella near Rhinelander packed their town hall to demand answers from the EPA and DNR about PFAS contamination. The toxic forever chemicals have been found at high levels in drinking water and waterways across the area. The DNR says that contamination came from industrial sludge spread on farm fields by two nearby paper companies. Wisconsin's coastal communities are getting more money to help improve and protect shorelines. In celebration of Coastal Awareness Month, the Wisconsin Department of Administration is handing out $1.3 million in Wisconsin Coastal Management Program grants to 35 communities across our state. Right now on the Defender podcast, the amazing story of one Wisconsin food that was banned, burned, disappeared from our plates, and the comeback that's being helped along by solar farms. Listen at cleanwisconsin.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey there, Wisconsin. Tom Hartman here. Democracy is not a spectator sport, so join me each and every weekday right here on Civic Media for the Tom Hartman program from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Covering the news of the day and sharing ways for you to get off the sidelines and get active in your community, because change starts with you. Get involved and tune in to the Tom Hartman program Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. right here on your local Civic Media radio station.
Lake Air, 1260 AM WLAK. Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, farmers across the country dealing with the Trump tariffs. We talked to a farmer from southwestern Missouri. Will Westmoreland will join us. Don't miss it.
Matinair on Air, weekday mornings 9 to 11.
You're listening to Lake Air WLAK, Amory's home for Matinair on Air.
Rocky and Tay Cheetah says it feels like it could rain, but nothing yet. And I'm looking at radar. It's out there. Some areas seeing more than others, huh?
Yeah, it just hasn't been amounting to a great deal. Eau Claire looks to be the winner, 0.09 of an inch. And La Crosse and Park Falls both at 0.03 of an inch. And Wausau had to weigh in 0.01 of an inch.
Yeah, it looks like there's a little bit that's kind of in Juneau County that's got some color to it. But, yeah, not maybe more coming in later today?
No, the front itself is pushing through the little string. We see very scattered little hit and misses from northeast into central and southwest Wisconsin. That's about it. Heavier rain in southeast Iowa, northern Missouri. That's not going to make its way here. We have just some scattered showers to be the possibility for a time this morning from central into east and southeast Wisconsin. Otherwise, we start to dry it out. In fact, in the west, a little more sun breaking through already this morning, but that sun returning even in the southeast by late this afternoon. So not a major rain event. Don't count on it making a big difference for how dry things have gotten. We're not going to add that much rain, but a little rain falling yet this morning in the central and eastern parts of the state, and we will dry it out and really see temperatures that are going to be around and a little bit on the above normal side. Normals in the low and mid 60s now for daytime highs. I expect upper 60s and maybe even a 70 in the south on Sunday, but there'll be another front edging in from the west. Could be another small possibility of rain on toward late Sunday or into early Monday. We'll check the forecast right after this.
We want nothing. We want nothing.
There's a full house in the stands tonight, and it sounds like they're demanding higher milk fat and lower feed costs.
Plenty, plenty, plenty.
These fans know that growing Pioneer brand Plenish high oleic soybeans for dairy rations can help producers increase milk fat production without increasing feed costs.
For dairy farmers, it's Plenish soybeans for the winning return on investment.
Plant the 100th season of Pioneer. Visit pioneer.com/feedplenish.
Keeping Wisconsin strong.
They believe in protecting the families and children in our farming communities. Kids love to be included in the daily farm activities, but accidents can happen quickly. Reduce the chance of injury by making sure your farm is a safe environment for adults and kids. Learn more at ruralmutual.com.
Rural Mutual Insurance, keeping Wisconsin strong.
All right, buddy, let's have that forecast. Lots of things going on this weekend. We've got UW homecoming. We've got the Packer game on Sunday. Are they going to have to close the roof at American Family Field for the Brewer game on Saturday?
I wouldn't think so at all. Should be sunny and nice. In fact, the Compeer Financial weather update does include that shower chance central and eastern Wisconsin yet this morning, but skies will clear from west to east through the rest of the day. Now, I'm anticipating a lot of mid and upper 60s, could be a low 70 in the south. South winds this morning in the east, 5 to 15, will become northwest as we head through the day. We clear it out overnight. Upper 30s, low 40s with a north breeze. Sunny on Saturday, a great day. Mid and upper 60s with north winds about 5. And Sunday, still some sunshine in the mid 60s, maybe a 70 in the south. Could be a little rain far west by late Sunday. Southeast winds 5 to 15. Pam, even with a little rain to start the week, I still expect those above normal temps sticking around through next week.
Excellent. Let's get a little sunshine on those Brewer bats and get them hot for the big game Saturday. So. Yeah, no kidding. All right, buddy, have a good one. We'll catch up with you on Monday.
We'll see you then.
Stumach, our ag meteorologist, with your Compeer Financial Ag Weather Update. Again, Compeer Financial, not just about being your agriculture partner, they're very committed to rural America. See more at compeer.com.
This is the Midwest Farm Report with Pam Jahnke.
This is Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK.
You're listening to the Midwest Farm Report on the Civic Media Radio Network. We now take you to a recent episode of The Todd Alba Show, an interview with UW-Madison's Rural EMS Outreach Program Manager, James Small.
So what is the mission of this relatively new program?
Most of my work is done with local government. So our goal of the program is to work on reliability and sustainability of the EMS response system itself. So a lot of that depends on funding from local government. It depends on organizational structure of the systems. We're not doing anything with patient care or system quality at all. There's other excellent training providers to provide that training. But where the gap really existed was to work with these local governments, particularly the small local governments that don't have the resources, to help walk them through that process, whether it's how do you increase funding, how do you maybe take your two volunteer ambulances and push them together and create one full-time ambulance and split the cost between the two communities. A lot of those kind of discussions.
What's the biggest challenge for these municipalities? And the second part of that, what's the cause in your opinion?
I'm not sure on the cause. I think that we've seen a decline nationwide in the availability of EMS services, particularly with volunteer services, that there's just a decline in availability of volunteers. I don't think that there's a lack of people wanting to go into it. Our licensing data is pretty consistent going back over a decade that at any given point we have about 18,000 people that have licenses in the state. What we do see is that about 7.5% of them are leaving the field every year and turning in their license. Maintaining a workforce, when you think about that, every 12 years we have to train the equivalent of the entire workforce, that's problematic. And then as we've seen the costs increase, that becomes very challenging, I think, for the particularly for the small municipalities to make that lift and look use the tools that are available to create the finances that are necessary to pay for things, because they may be going from a volunteer staff member to a full-time staff member, which is considerably more expensive. And then we also have like hyperinflation in this space, whether it's on capital equipment. Personnel costs are outpacing CPI by 2 to 3-fold going back almost 10 years. Mm-hmm. So, you know, all at once, where a few years ago you might have been hiring a full-timer for $50,000 a year, that position might be 80 or 90 now.
Wow.
So it's gotten really, really expensive really, really fast. You know, when it was a volunteer system in the 80s, when a lot of these systems really came of age, there wasn't 911 yet. Mm-hmm. So the amount of, the access of the system had a barrier in it, which 911 is erased, having that capacity to handle these increases too. Because if you look at some of these systems, you know, if they formed back in the early 70s, they might have done like a dozen calls that first year. Mm-hmm. That same system might be doing like a couple thousand now.
Really?
And you're trying to do it with the same base that you built it off of these volunteers that came in that wanted to come help the community. And they needed a first aid card and a CPR card because there wasn't even EMS licensing yet. For now, it's a couple hundred hours of training to get in the door.
To subscribe and find all of Civic Media's podcast library, head over to civicmedia.us/shows.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK. Amory's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. The ceasefire in Gaza has taken effect. The Israeli cabinet approved President Trump's plan for a ceasefire late Thursday. All hostages will be released, but ABC's Ian Panel in Tel Aviv says there are still many questions.
People are understandably very skeptical on the Gazan side of the border that what will happen is that Hamas released the hostages, and then there's no further part to the deal. It's a very real fear that Israel will then resume the war.
Venezuelan politician Marina Corina Machado won the Nobel Peace Prize. The Norwegian Nobel Committee cited her key unification work within Venezuela's political opposition. Government shutdown looks set to stretch into next week after the Senate left for the weekend with no deal. And New York's Attorney General Letitia James calls criminal charges filed by a federal prosecutor baseless and says President Trump is weaponizing the administration of justice. This is ABC News.
Game 5 tomorrow night. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Baseball, the last time the Brewers faced Cubs pitcher Matthew Boyd, they knocked in 3 runs in the first inning. Last night, Boyd pitched into the 5th as the Cubs shut out the crew 6-0. Pat Murphy.
Yeah, I mean, he was great. Boyd was fantastic. He made pitches. How much money did they give him? $39 million. He earned it tonight. He was great.
So Game 5 is tomorrow night at 7:08 at American Family Field to decide who will advance to face the Dodgers for the National League pennant. NBA, the Bucks beat the Pistons 117-111 last night in preseason basketball in Milwaukee. NFL, the Packers face the Bengals Sunday afternoon, but kicker Brandon McManus injured his kicking leg at Wednesday's practice, a quad injury. Matt LaFleur.
Yeah, that's a major concern right now. So we'll see how he's doing today and tomorrow. And, you know, we'll have a plan ready to go.
Now, McManus says he thinks he'll be okay. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
T. Schwaba. On the next Nightlight, I talk about the new Civic Media sports show, Make the Call, with Parker Olson and Greg Gunderson. And it's a bar band Friday night, so Terry Barr is in the house. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with P. Schwaba. Weeknights from 6 till 8.
You're listening to 107.5 WLAK, Amory's home for Matt and Air on Air weekdays from 9 to 11 a.m.
It is going to be mostly sunny today, another beautiful fall day with a high in the low to mid 60s here this afternoon. Tonight, clear, we'll drop into the upper 30s to near 40. Then tomorrow, more of the same, lots of sunshine with a high in the mid to upper 60s. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Outside now, it's 50.
As veterans, we're no strangers to helping others.
That's what we were taught, service before self.
But we do have one question for the veterans listening.
When is the last time you reached out for help?
If you or someone you know needs resources, whether it's for stress, finances, employment, or mental health, don't wait. Reach out.
Find more information at va.gov/reach. That's va.gov/reach.
Brought to you by the United States Department of Veterans Affairs and the Ad Council.
This is Robert Pilot, host of Native Roots Radio. On our show, we talk about Native issues like treaties, protecting Mother Earth, and holding our elected officials accountable. You'll also hear from Turtle Island voices like Arvina Martin, State Representative Heather Keeler, Ruth Anna Buffalo, Dr. Anthony Stately, State Senator Mary Kunish, Robert Lilligren, and Bob Blake. Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
Native Roots Radio, weeknights at 8 on your local Civic Media radio station.
You're listening to the Midwest Farm Report on the Civic Media Radio Network. We now take you to a recent Darren Von Ruden appearance on Matt and Air on Air.
How are our dairy farmers doing?
So Dadcap's latest numbers showed that we're down to just a little bit over 5,200 dairy farms. Back in 1986, when I graduated from high school, we had 44,800 and something dairy farms in the state of Wisconsin. And so today, now with that information coming out, we've dropped a lot faster than I thought we would. Back in the late 90s, I did some work on dairy pricing reform and tried to get a system in that would hopefully keep more smaller farms in business, and have not succeeded in that yet. And so, you know, we're looking at that number, you know, continuing to dwindle. You know, so next year, by the time my 40-year graduation date is, I'm pretty sure we're going to be under 5,000 dairy farms in the state of Wisconsin, because we're still losing one and a half a day. Since 2020, we've lost 25% of the dairy farms here in the state. And, you know, that just, you know, it's disheartening. Really, it should be looking at a national security issue for a couple different reasons. Number one, because diversity is always the best way to have a food system. If you get too congregated, it really puts the whole system at stake. And, you know, number two, we just have to make sure that we have a high quality workforce. We're losing those generations of high quality workers.
I guess the question, and something we always talk about, Darren, on the show, whether it's with you or with other farmers or just in general when we're discussing this topic, is
the government's role in working with the farmers and the farming industry. What is, in your mind, and I don't even want to say a perfect world, but what does the government do in your version that helps sustain the amount of farmers, grow them, or at least take care of them to the place where they're not having to worry every single day about shutting down? What do you want to see from the government as far as partnership? What do they need to do?
So number one thing is make sure that there's a fair market. Looking at what's going on across the country with the very uncompetitive markets that we see, because we can't sell our products into a market that's not being manipulated by big business at this point. It's been that way for decades already. It's just getting worse because we have less players there. Number two, making sure that farmers get a cost production for the products that they produce so that they can stay in business and that, you know, new farmers can actually come into the business too. Or number three, stop handing out government checks to the largest farms at prices at an amount that's way above what should be.
To subscribe and find all of Civic Media's podcast library, head over to civicmedia.us/shows.
Lake Air, 1260 AM WLAK. The AM.
Here we go, gliding into the weekend. Got any big plans? I'll tell you what, there will be no poultry shows for you to attend this weekend. That announcement came from the Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection yesterday. Four counties that are impacted by their suspension. And I'll tell you what, one county was surprised. They had a poultry swap show scheduled for Saturday, and they say they never received word from the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection about the cancellation. They're mad. I've got that story as one of many on the way. Welcome back to the Midwest Farm Report. I am Farm Director Pam Yonke on this, the 10th day of October. Oh, my goodness. On this day back in 1982, the Brewers won the pennant, the American League pennant. They got a spot in the 79th World Series against the National League St. Louis Cardinals. They won the pennant on this day back in 1982. Come on, Brew Crew. Back in Milwaukee on Saturday. Come on. Let's see if we can do it. Good luck. Let's see. What else do I have for you? Also, we've got some happy birthdays for you this morning. Remember that guy, Mario Lopez, who was, part of the Saved by the Bell crew? He's turning 52 today. And I got to be honest with you. One of my favorite guys. I just love him. Quarterback Brett Favre. He turns 56 today, and now you know. This morning, we're wrapping up our Rural Mental Health Series. Kylie Allen joining us now with a story about how one farmer turned to social media blogging as a way to not only help her therapeutically, but hopefully help others. Kylie?
Although Brittany Olson's journey with mental health begins in her childhood, it translates now to her adult life. Brittany and her husband are the fifth generation on their operation, where they milk 40 registered Holsteins and Jerseys and farm about 200 acres in South Barron County.
Farming, it wasn't exactly the tipping point for my journey with mental health, but it certainly plays a pretty large part in it. I didn't grow up on a farm, but I grew up around farming. We helped out on my dad's brother's family farm quite a bit when I was little, and those experiences stuck with me. And when I was growing up, things were not hunky-dory at home. And when I was 9, my mother decided to file for divorce from our dad, and she kidnapped my sister and I and filed a restraining order. And my dad wasn't able to find us for about a month.
Well, thank you very much for sharing that, Brittany. Can you tell me how did that transition then into your life now?
So as a result of those events, I've lived with anxiety and panic attacks most of my life. And, you know, through middle school and high school and college, that was always just kind of something I dealt with. When I was a senior in college, I wrote a blog for the Wisconsin Farm Bureau Federation, and I wrote a blog post about specifically dealing with panic attacks. And about a month after I wrote it, I was at the State Farm Bureau annual meeting, and I lost count of how many people came up to me and told me that my blog post made them feel less alone. And it was like, whoa, there's a lot of people that are out here struggling. And since then, I've tried to be more of an open book about the things that I deal with so that hopefully it helps one person out there feel less alone. And if I help one person feel less alone in their struggles and the things that they're dealing with, then I have succeeded in my efforts.
You know, I love that. And that's actually one of the reasons I like talking about these things, is because more often than not, we all experience something to some extent. And so initially you wrote that blog post and now you're passionate about getting the word out. Why did you write it initially?
I was really having a hard time, and writing is just how I process things.
So tell me, why do you think it's important to share your journey?
Like a lot of things, the more we talk about difficult topics, the less taboo they become, and the stigma that is attached to those topics starts to dissipate. And in particular, this stigma can be deadly for a lot of people. You know, like a lot of diseases, anxiety and depression can be fatal if left untreated. And if helping one person feel less alone and less lost in their trials and tribulations helps them get the help and the resources that they need to heal and thrive, then those are the conversations that we need to be having.
So you found that writing was that outlet for you to process some of those emotions. Was there anything else you did that helped you?
Going to church and going to therapy.
And tell me, do you have advice? What's your liner, one liner, if you had to give someone who's struggling right now?
We're all struggling and dealing with something. It doesn't matter what it is. We're all just out here winging it. But I just want everyone to know that you matter. Your life has purpose and you are loved, and this world is a better place because you are in it. In farming specifically, we face a suicide rate that is 2 to 3 times higher than that of the general public. And the general public faces pretty significant barriers to mental health care access. And in farming, it's even more exacerbated because of the financial and other barriers that we might face, which makes it all the more important to have conversations about mental health and accessing mental health care. Because the more we talk about these things, the more we can point people in the direction of resources that they need so that they can heal and thrive and be the best possible farmer, husband, wife, father, mother, person that they can be. Without the farmer, there is no farm.
Proud to share her story to help others. That was Brittany Olson along with us. We know mental health is important, and that's why this week we're happy to work with our friends at Rural Mutual Insurance to guide the conversation. At Rural Mutual Insurance, we're more than policies. We're your Wisconsin neighbors, here to protect what matters most. Together, we're keeping families, farms, and communities strong. Learn more at ruralmutual.com.
We want the feel of the crop. We want the feel of the crop.
There's a buzz on the field tonight. The dairy farming crowd is demanding Pioneer brand Plenish high oleic soybeans.
Plenty, plenty, plenty.
These fans know that growing Plenish high oleic soybeans for dairy rations can help farmers reduce ration costs while increasing milk fat content.
The cream of the crop rises to the top.
Plant the 100th season of Pioneer. Visit pioneer.com/feedplenish.
At Rural Mutual Insurance, we understand harvest season can bring long hours, tough decisions, and added stress. That's why this week on the Midwest Farm Report, we're shining a light on mental health in agriculture. Tune in each day or catch the Midwest Farm Report podcast to hear real stories from Wisconsin farmers and experts. And visit ruralmutual.com/farmsafety for resources to help you and your family stay safe and healthy this harvest season. Rural Mutual Insurance, keeping Wisconsin strong.
At Channel, we always show up for our farmers. Is that tar spot or rust?
Incoming!
Definitely rust.
Rick, how did you...
Dropping in to check on your crop, Bill. Let's call your agronomist before that rust can hurt your yield.
That sounds great, but when did you learn to skydive?
Self-taught, Bill. Kind of a prodigy. From personalized insights to year-round support, Channel Seed Pros always show up. Visit channel.com to learn more. Channel, all in, all season. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Yesterday, the Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection announced that they were suspending
all poultry shows, exhibitions, swap meets, and movement of poultry to other events in Jefferson, Waukesha, Walworth, and Rock counties. That's in place until the end of the calendar year. And this announcement surprised some folks. In fact, tomorrow, the Beaver, Pigeon, and Bantam Poultry Swap was supposed to happen at the Jefferson County Fairgrounds in Jefferson. Dan Schwant is the secretary of the organization, and he said he understands the biosecurity concerns. What he doesn't understand is why he was not notified. He said he found out about the new suspension of the poultry shows through friends and getting text messages from people. And that was all happening while he was setting up equipment at the Jefferson County Fair Park.
I already started with the setup process. I already had emptied all the cooping out of the semi-trailer, and then all of a sudden a friend of mine messaged me and said, hey, did you see what the dad cap did? And so that was news to me, and I was like, what? Because I checked my email, there was nothing there. And I called another one of our members and asked her, and she said she had received nothing either. So, and then it was just on, saw it on the website there. And so we've had to cancel one of our previous events because of the AI, and they contacted me in advance and said, hey, I had to cancel. So this time I had nothing. We were outside of that, their 10 kilometer restricted area, so with the fairgrounds, so I figured we were good.
Not a happy camper at all. That's Dan Schwant. He is the secretary of the Beaver, Pigeon, and Bantam Poultry Swap. They were getting set up for the show that was supposed to happen tomorrow at the Jefferson County Fair Park. And then they find out that the suspension's in place. And as you could tell by what Dan said, it's not so much about the biosecurity measures. He understands that. He said it's the lack of communication from the Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection when they knew their show was coming up on Saturday. We'll keep you posted. And like I said, if you are a poultry owner and want to know more about the suspension, pop on over to the Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection website for details. Markets on a Friday morning trending a little lower in Chicago. December corn's down a half at 417. November soybeans are down a nickel right now at 1017. July new crop wheat, that's up a half at 549. Barrel cheese was unchanged Thursday in Chicago at 174. 40-pound block cheese gained 2.5. I make that 2.25 at 176. Double A butter dropped 4.75 cents to 160.25 per pound. The November class 3 milk that goes into cheese is down 14 cents, 1650. December's down 11 right now, 1663, 100 weight. I think I'll save our conversation with Charlie Behrens about the new Born to Dairy campaign until Monday. Up next, Ben Jarbo got a chance to visit with Wisconsin Representative Derek Van Orden about efforts to try to get some immigration reform in place. Ben's got that around the corner.
Can't get enough farm news? The stories you hear and more 24/7 at MidwestFarmReport.com. Stay tuned as we'll be right back.
You're listening to Lake Air WLAK, Amory's home for Matt and Air on Air.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. The Trump administration confirmed in September it is sharing driver's license and Social Security information among federal and state agencies from a massive database of personal and voter data. A class action lawsuit by voters and pro-voter groups has been filed to stop it. Since May, 38 states have received requests to turn over voter registration and voting records, according to the Brennan Center for Justice. As of October 1st, the only state to have complied is Indiana. Eight states which refused to comply have now been sued by the Trump Department of Justice. The administration reportedly repurposed an existing U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services database for verifying immigration status called Systematic Alien Verification for Entitlements, or the SAVE system. NPR reported in September that the immigration status of 33 million voters had been checked using the database. The new lawsuit contends, quote, Congress passed the Privacy Act of 1974 specifically to prevent the government from creating formal or de facto national databanks or centralized federal information systems that would consolidate sensitive personal information of Americans stored at separate agencies, unquote. The voters and groups are asking the court for an injunction prohibiting the administration from using personal data not allowed by the Privacy Act. We've linked the complaint from AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
I like these organized mazes much, much better. On our street, there were these triplets, and the triplets were like 3 or 4 years old. We were just talking with the neighbors, and next thing we know, the triplets are gone. They thought we were playing hide and seek, so even though we're calling for them in the cornfield, they're not calling back. And that was a crazy 20 minutes, a fearful 20 minutes with the sun going down till we found them.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays 6 to 9 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. This is Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK. Todd Alba.
Hey, everybody, you've heard the voice, First and 10 Wisconsin, and Ron Dane. Now meet the man behind the voice, Mike Mankey, Badger PA announcer, in studio with us next time.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays 2 to 4.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK. Amory's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Dave is here to share a deeper dive into what this bill looks like.
Every farm I go to, every farm, and I try to spend as much time on farms as possible because it is truly my happy place. Everybody needs labor, and no one can find enough labor. And I asked everybody, if you had more labor, could you milk more cows? Yes. Could you process more potatoes? Yes. Could you raise more hogs? Yes. Could you process more hogs? Yes. So that's in the processing side. So everybody needs labor. And so we're just acknowledging something that everyone knows is true, that if you deported every single person that is here working on our farms, the agriculture industry would collapse immediately, as would the hospitality industry and the construction industry. These are just facts. And so what we've done is taken a very pragmatic approach to try to make sure that we can have a consistent group of people working here, so that the guys that are and gals that are running the business know that they can run their business. And then the humanitarian aspect of this is that a lot of these folks have been here for decades, and they're our neighbors. Our kids go to school together, and you know, they're working really hard to support their family. And that's just a fact. I mean, we in government have to face we've got to face some real simple facts, and our job is to try to make things better for people. So here's the gist. There's some very strict provisions. The only crime these folks can have committed to be eligible for this program is entering the country illegally, and that is a crime. So if they've committed any other crimes, they're not eligible for this program. They're going to have to go onto an app. We want to get a button on the CBP One app, because right now there's a button you can push. You get $1,000 and a plane ticket home. That's self-deportation, and over 1 million folks have done that already. But you'd push a button and you'd go into a temporary protected status for a year. The worker's going to have to physically leave the United States and enter through a legal port of entry. And the message is going to be very clear. If you're going to work in this country, or if you want to move to this country, you're going to do it legally. End of story. They're going to have to pay a fine. And the reason they have to pay a fine is because they broke the law. And if you get a speeding ticket, you pay a fine, right? Same concept. The employer is also going to have to pay a fine, because the employers know that these folks are here unlawfully. They do. And so that's really the basic gist. Now, I want to be crystal clear. This is not amnesty. And it's not a pathway to citizenship other than how any other person would become a citizen. Because once you come back into the country lawfully, if you want to be a citizen, you've got to get in line with everybody else. So I'll give you an example. Let's say I've been working here for 50 years on a dairy farm, and I get enrolled in this program. I leave the country. Someone steps into the country for the first time, never been here. They got here 5 seconds before me. Guess what? They're in the head of the line. I am not. You're not skipping any lines here. And I think this is about an 80% solution. It's been solicited around. I introduced it a couple of weeks ago. It's getting very, very positive feedback in Congress. And we're discussing this with some folks in the administration. And how I would like to see this sequenced, if we can get it done, is I'd like to see some immediate executive action taken by the Trump administration based off of this legislation, and then have the legislation pass through the House and the Senate and get signed into law. That's what we're looking at doing. And everybody I'm talking to in the agriculture industry is very excited about this. And if we can use this as a template for, you know, construction and hospitality, that's a good thing too.
I mean, obviously, one of the things that might perk up some of our producers' ears that would use this is that fine talk. Do you have any idea how much that fine would be at all at this current moment?
Maybe $2,500 to $5,000. But listen, they're hiring people illegally. That is unlawful. It's period. So there has to be consequences for breaking the law. We also have to understand that gravity's real. Rocks are heavy and trees are made of wood. This is the hand that we've been dealt, and we've got to play it the best way possible. But that's here's the other thing. If producers don't want to do this and these people get deported, if you get deported from the United States, you can never lawfully enter the country again. Like that worker is gone forever if they don't enroll them in some type of program.
Representative Van Orden says that if this bill were to pass, it would be up to the Secretary of Labor to decide, one, how long these workers need to leave the country, and two, how much that fine will be. For the Midwest Farm Report, I'm Ben Jarbo.
This is the Midwest Farm Report with Pam Youngke.
Lake Air, 1260 AM WLAK.
I love playing sports, especially for my school. And that's because school sports are special. It's where it's safe to fail. It's where we're taught resilience, where our fear becomes confidence. It's where we learn to get back up after every fall. School sports are where 7.8 million students go from I can't to I can.
This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
Cotton industry is promoting natural fibers over synthetics for clothing. Next on Farm to Fork. 4 months ago, I began airing a message about the possibility that the dozen regional centers for agricultural safety and health were at risk of closing because of funding cuts. I've now learned that those funds will not be shut off and that the centers may continue operating. One center representative said, quote, "We are convinced that media visibility and support helped turn the tide." So, let's pick up where I left off with our 2025 Farm Safety and Health campaign. Unless your farm caters to agro-tourists, you should be careful about hosting visitors who are not used to being around livestock or machinery. It poses a safety risk to them and a liability issue for you if your insurance doesn't cover persons outside of the farming operation. Farm safety and health is everyone's business. This reminder is brought to you by Farm to Fork through the generous support of listeners like you across the country. Learn how you can help at NorthshoreProductions.com. Marjorie Walker of the National Cotton Council says there's a good reason to choose cotton over synthetics in clothing.
People are concerned about microplastic pollution in general. The research shows they often don't realize how much clothing contributes to that problem or what they can do about it. Our survey found that only about a third of Americans were very aware of microplastics pollution, and less than half of those connected it to their clothes.
Walker says microplastics are a big deal with clothing.
Synthetic clothing textile microfibers are believed to be the single largest source of primary microplastics in our oceans, potentially contributing as much as 35% of the total global release.
How do you know whether your clothing is natural or synthetic? Walker says, just read the label.
Because items you think are cotton might not be made of cotton. There's a lot of product out there that says feels like cotton, from sheets to shirts. Choosing natural fibers like cotton is a very simple and impactful way to reduce the microplastics textile pollution.
Walker says you'll be hearing a lot about this in the months ahead.
People have not thought about this at all when it comes to what you're wearing. People are trying to do the best they can about putting good food in their bodies, and we need them to understand it's also what you're putting on your body.
Go to plantnotplastic.org to learn more. That's Farm to Fork. I'm Daryl Anderson.
Pat Kreitlow.
Friday morning, Mike Clemens will have all the details on tonight's Game 4 at Wrigley between the Brewers and Cubs, and preview Sunday's Packer game against the Bengals.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays 6 to 9. The Maggie Dawn Show.
State Senator Jeff Smith. We're talking about the Veteran Housing and Recovery Program. Republicans blocked funding for this.
They instead sent the governor a 16-page letter blaming him for this problem. Well, it was in his budget. Once the budget is out of his office and in their hands, it's up to them. Our job is to manage the funding. We can do it, but the governor can't. So it's avoiding our own responsibility by not addressing that.
The award-winning Maggie Dawn Show. Weekday afternoons from 4 until 6.
When it comes to vaping, the truth can get clouded. So let's make it clear. Vaping is not safe for youth.
Because vaping can put microscopic particles into your lungs.
And dangerous things like metals into your body.
And nicotine, which can harm a person's brain development through their mid-20s.
With appealing flavors, high nicotine levels, and lots of promotion on social media.
Many kids think vaping is harmless, but it's not.
So talk to your kids about the risks of vaping.
Because when you talk, they hear you.
Learn more at underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
Missed your favorite show live on air? It's easy to find what you enjoy wherever you listen to podcasts, including Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. And we're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app.
You're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK Amory and 107.5 FM W298DK Amory. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu speaking moments after the ceasefire in Gaza took effect. This phase of the deal, brokered by President Trump, calls on Hamas to release all hostages within 24 hours. The president suggested his work should make him the Nobel Peace Prize recipient, but that decision was made earlier in the week. And today, the Norwegian Nobel Committee announced this year's winner, Venezuelan opposition politician Maria Corina Machado.
Despite serious threats against her life, she has remained in the country, a choice that has inspired millions.
That's committee chair Jürgen Vatna Fridnes. New York's attorney general Letitia James called criminal charges against her baseless. Bank fraud and false statement charges filed by President Trump's hand-picked U.S. attorney in Virginia's Eastern District. No end in sight to the government shutdown as the Senate leaves. This is ABC News.
You're listening.